Now it's election season here in Wisconsin and around the country, with midterm primaries underway and the general election in November. Issues like the economy, education, and crime are big topics as usual. But another big issue may be the future of democracy itself. Our next guest writes, there are growing threats to our system of elected government in the United States. She says power has become more consolidated, making minority rule possible, decreasing political competition. And she says political theater has become more dominant than substantive debate, which means real issues that affect voters aren't always talked about. I want to hear from you at 800-642-1234. Do you have some basic concerns about our system of government, our system of representative government in the United States? How about specific things like gerrymandering, the role of the Supreme Court, the U.S. Senate, the filibuster? Do those in particular worry you? Call 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234, or email ideas@WPR.org. Julia Azari is an associate professor of political science at Marquette University. Julia, welcome back to Central Time.
Thank you so much for having me.
Before we get into some of the specific concerns you raised in a recent piece, I just want to kind of get your temperature on this. You know, it's a normal election season in some ways. Candidates are talking about issues like they normally do. But there are people worried that there are fundamental threats to the future of this whole system of elections and democracy. How worried are you?
So I'm sort of in the middle, I think, in terms of where political scientists and other people who watch this stuff closely are. I think there are people who are really, really concerned. And one of the pieces that I reference, one of the ideas that I reference in the piece, is someone who's written kind of about the conditions of civil war and said that the United States looks like a place that's going to go into civil war. And I think everyone who follows politics can really relate to the idea that sometimes you see the temperature being turned just way up and it feels like no compromise can be had. On the other hand, though, I think, as I write in the piece, I think there are some reasons for hope, and that we're at this sort of moment right now that we could see as really a big crisis, or we could also see as a kind of important inflection point where we really, as a country, started paying attention to a lot of important issues and thinking about how we do this, how we work together as a country across lots of difference to really have self-government, to have government by the people in a way that includes everybody. So I think there's reason for hope. There's reason to think this country's quite resilient, but there's also a lot of things in our politics that are not consistent with what many of us, I think, grew up to expect from a democratic country and from our system.
Yeah, that's one of the core themes in your recent piece, that some of our institutions of government don't very well reflect popular opinion, popular sentiment in the United States. What kind of things do you have in mind?
A lot of things when I started to think about it, which is not great. If you're like me and you grew up in this country in the 1980s, in my case, and, you know, kind of learned that the core of democracy is we have checks and balances, but we do have a kind of sense that the people rule. And it's not that majority always rules, but that it sort of moves in that general direction. And that when governing institutions, when governing bodies do things that people don't like, that the people have some recourse. That's the sort of story of the American Revolution that I learned growing up. And what we see instead is, you know, a Senate that reflects a design that was done at a time when the state population differences were much smaller than they are now. So it's very unequal in terms of how many people each senator represents. We see, here in the state of Wisconsin, our state legislature set up in a way that it's just impossible for one of the two parties to win in a state that's very competitive and where in many offices, you know, it's normal to expect Democrats and Republicans to flip back and forth and share power, because that reflects the balance of opinion in our state. You see this with the power that the courts have, and the Supreme Court in particular. If no institution is really checking the court, they can basically do whatever they want. And I've been thinking about this for about a decade, about that kind of the ability of the court to rule on issues like campaign finance. Of course, everyone's thinking about abortion. It's possible we're going to get a ruling soon on gun control. To rule in ways that are really out of step with how most Americans think. And that's not how that's not how I learned that was supposed to be.
Let's focus in on the Supreme Court for a little bit. A very solid conservative majority. There's an argument with the Supreme Court that, hey, it's not supposed to move with public sentiment and popular opinion. They're supposed to be preserving fundamental foundational ideas of American government. How worried are you that they've swayed too far from public sentiment?
Yeah, I'm a bit worried about it. And I think no one really has the final authority on what the Supreme Court is supposed to do. The Article 3 in the Constitution that sets up the judicial branch is pretty sparse. Our notion of judicial review comes instead from kind of informal understandings that developed early on in the Republic. People point to different cases to establish that the court is supposed to kind of protect fundamental rights from this majority that wants to take them away. And I think we have to think really critically about what that actually means in practice, what it actually means to protect rights. And if by definition, if the court makes a decision, that doesn't mean that rights are being protected, right? That's, I think, the key response I would have to that is no one really has a monopoly on what it is the court is supposed to do. And if they were to play that role, if they were to play this sort of what we call in political science counter-majoritarian, kind of rolls off the tongue, if they were to play that role where they're protecting rights against a majority that wants to take them away, then that could be an important role. But it's also, it doesn't mean that they get to have a kind of unchecked ability to do that. It would mean that the other two branches are checking their power. And we don't really see that happening in a meaningful way in contemporary politics. So that's the other thing I think that sort of happened is the role of the Supreme Court has kind of evolved over time in politics.
How about dysfunction in another branch of government? People often point to Congress with inability or unwillingness to pass a lot of laws that I think people are hoping to see something happen on. Years of debate over immigration, for example. The government often works by a presidential executive order and court challenges to that order back and forth. Is there something in Congress that would help it step up and be a more equal branch of government, if I'm even right to say that it's dysfunctional in the first place?
Yeah, I mean, it's pretty slow. And again, we kind of get to this question of, like, how are these things supposed to operate? What was the original logic of the design? How does that logic compare with what's going on in our country now? And people, again, have been kind of talking about Congress. You know, there's this book called The Broken Branch that I think was first published in 2006. So we've been talking a lot about Congress in this regard. Immigration is a big focus there. There was a lot of talk amongst some students I was teaching last week about why gun control failed in 2013 after Sandy Hook, particularly some pretty middle of the road compromise measures that are quite popular with Americans. I mean, I think that one big thing there, you hear a lot about the filibuster, making the Senate by default a 60-vote body. Let me say this carefully. I think that if there were a possibility that 60-vote requirement meant that you did have to build big, broad compromises, get a lot of people on board, get a lot of different perspectives, come to a common ground between conservatives and liberals, if that 60-vote threshold were achieving that goal, then that could be a good thing. But instead, it just means nothing ever gets passed because people in the Senate and on many pieces of legislation, important, you know, high stakes legislation, are going to vote party lines. And it's pretty unusual for one party to get 60 votes. So that's sort of my take on the filibuster.
Talking to Julia Azari from Marquette University about dysfunction in American government, threats to our system of representative government. You can join in at 800-642-1234. You also write that political spectacle has taken over more and more as opposed to substantive debate. What kind of things are you looking at?
Yeah, so I'm looking, I mean, let's be honest, I'm spending way too much of my time looking at Twitter. but, you know, I'm not alone. And I think that between social media, between cable, there's so many opportunities to sort of score political points, right? To make a video or do a tweet or both, or there's probably some other social media I'm I'm not even thinking about, I don't know what goes on TikTok. I'm too old, but you know, there's a lot of, I think, opportunities to kind of score political points or create some kind of spectacle, as opposed to tackling something that really actually matters and that people actually care about. And that's kind of the thing that I was thinking about as I was thinking about some of these issues, is that you'll see representatives, elected officials, or people seeking office kind of using their platform to score political points and talk about what the other side isn't doing, rather than, or to talk about these sort of explosive cultural issues, that some of which are not really, you know, issues that are on the public mind, rather than addressing the economy, which is almost always everyone's top priority, security, you know, war in Ukraine, you name, there's any number of issues people are concerned about. Climate change, certainly something I hear a lot about in my work with young people. So that is essentially what I meant by that.
Julia Azaria is with us, Associate Professor of Political Science at Marquette University. She's talking to us about the state of American democracy, possible threats to our system of representative government, possible solutions to those problems. You can join in at 800-642-1234. In this election year, do you feel like it's a normal election year? You're looking at the normal sorts of things you would watch for from a candidate, or do you have a bigger sense that something is at risk, that something is threatened here in the way we do representative democracy in the United States? Call it at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234, or email ideas@WPR.org. We'll pick up the conversation coming up on Central Time. This is Central Time. I'm Rob Verrett. We're picking up our talk with Julia Azari. She's an associate professor of political science at Marquette University. We're looking at the ways that American representative government may not be functioning well, maybe some possible fixes. You can join in at 800-642-1234. Let's go to your calls now. Richard is with us in Waukesha. Richard, hi.
Yeah, I'm concerned about the response to January 6th and how it seems sympathizers to the argument that Trump won the election have been getting elected and or appointed to positions which are going to control the election in 2024.
Richard, thanks for the call. Julia?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I think people are very concerned about that. And I think that, you know, one of the reasons that the 2020 election during some very tough conditions went down in terms of the counting of the votes as smoothly as it did is because there were Republicans and Democrats alike at the state and local level who are election officials who did their jobs. That, you know, those positions tend to be very low, you know, low attention kind of offices, and people who are sympathetic to kind of violent perspectives are I think in some cases are winning these primaries. The primaries are still going on. I think that's a big concern. And that's, I talk a little bit about that in the sort of the consolidation of power part of the article, about the ways in which some of what's going on in our country has tipped from, like, okay, the two parties are always trying to jockey a little bit for an advantage, to, okay, there's a specific movement. And I think it's largely contained in one party, which is even more unfortunate. It's concentrated, that has, you know, decided to reject elections. And that's, everybody of every political persuasion should be really concerned about that. And we should, I think, all be invested in the integrity of our democracy. And then we can battle it out about the issues, of course, peacefully.
Richard, thanks for that call. Matt joins us now in Minocqua. Hi, Matt.
Hi, Ms. Azari. Just a quick shout out to you. My son graduated from Marquette about 4 years ago, and he sang your praises, said you're an amazing teacher and had a great experience in your class. So,
oh, wow.
That was for
you,
but yeah.
Thank you.
My question is, you know, to me, it seems like a no-brainer that term limits would be a solution to a lot of our problems. I know that, you know, there's people for and against. I'm just wondering what your opinion is for or against term limits, if that would, you know, solve a lot of the problems and the dysfunction in our government.
Matt, thanks for the call. We've got term limits for our presidents, Julia, but of course not for Congress. What do you think?
Yeah, absolutely. So term limits are probably the area where professional political scientists are the furthest away from mainstream public opinion. Political scientists tend to, I won't say we all hate term limits. So there's a range of opinion, but most people are skeptical. And the main reason for this, and there's some research on this, which I don't have in front of me, but the basic idea is when you have newcomers coming into Congress constantly, one of the things that they become more dependent on is kind of interest groups and lobbyists for more information. And so when you don't have experienced legislators, you become even more, the system becomes even more dominated by these organized and well-funded interests. That's one concern. Another concern, you kind of think about, like, well, what are the incentives of people in their last term? You know, what are they thinking about? If they're not interested in courting re-election, then what are they trying to do? And often people, I think, are suspicious that the answer is trying to get a job, again, at one of these well-paying lobbying firms. And, you know, I think there's a great book about term limits for presidents by a scholar named Michael Corzi, C-O-R-Z-I. I don't remember the name of the book, but it's something pretty straightforward that kind of talks about, it mostly talks about how they came to be, but a little bit, I think it's worth thinking about, like, has this been a good development for the presidency? Has it limited presidential power, which I think is somewhat of a seemingly contradictory answer, but it seems like no. On the plus side, I will say, of term limits, I do think there are some people in the scholarly profession who are kind of sympathetic to the problems with term limits, but on the other hand, it's like, okay, it's become absurd for people to serve in Congress for decades upon decades. That is, you know, really, I think, does violate a lot of people's sense of what democracy should be about, and does give a sense that folks are really insulated from, you know, from any real political pressure to do what their constituents want. They're just kind of there. They don't ever really face any true accountability. We can debate about that. Some people might say, well, if you like your representative, you should be able to keep voting for them if they're doing a good job. So I think there's really a live debate to be had about that. But I do think that there's widespread concern about members of Congress serving for these just, you know, enormous amounts of time.
Matt, thanks for calling in, talking to Julia Azari from Marquette University about potential threats to American representative government. One more point I wanted to get to in that piece we referenced. You're worried about the normalization of white supremacy in politics. Can you talk about that a little?
Yeah, I mean, I've spent a lot of time talking about that over the last couple of years. And I think that this, you know, one issue that I've sort of seen subtly creep up is more and more kind of extremist views becoming expressed in more mainstream ways. We have seen some of that. We have kind of seen, you know, what happened a couple months ago this is more fresh in my mind when I wrote the piece a while back. But some members of Congress, Republicans, had gone to a white supremacy conference. They were rebuked by Republican Party leadership, GOP leadership, distance themselves from that. But the way our parties are structured, they don't have a lot of control over it. So I'm very concerned about that. I'm also concerned about the ways in which there's kind of everyday racism that seeps into politics. And in both parties, I wrote a little bit about this and about some research that suggests, you know, Democrats also will kind of distance themselves from the concerns of African-American and other non-white citizens when they feel like it's politically advantageous, and that's often the case. So I think this is something where I don't think this is playing out the same way in the two parties. I know that's not what some people want to hear, but that's what I think. But yet at the same time, I think that there is, the party system doesn't do a great job championing the concerns of communities of color, and our history means that those concerns do need to be addressed through the political system. That's, I guess, how I would phrase that.
Julia, just a couple minutes left, and I think I've biased our conversation more on the threat side and less on the hope side. Talk a little more about the hopes you have to overcome some of these problems.
Yeah, so I have a couple of hopes in terms of thinking about where we're at and where we've been. One is that I think part of it is there are a lot of people invested in the stability of this country. We have a really robust, what I describe in the piece, of civil society, of organizations, of private businesses and industry, a lot of things, a lot of organized ways in which people operate in our society. And it's fairly rare, I think, to see an authoritarian takeover when you have such a robust civil society and so many people who are invested in our country continuing to operate. I also think these are often, like I said, when you look back in history, these moments of great tension and conflict are really the moments where you see, like, this is where things change. This is where things get better for groups that have historically been left out of the conversation or been kept out of opportunities because of who they are. This is how change occurs. And it also seems like we actually do have some agreement on some of the major issues, maybe not on everything, but a country that has kind of like modest majorities in favor of a number of issue stances and kind of progress that they would like to see. It's just a matter of our government being able to reflect that. So I think, like, in contrast with other points in time when the country was really truly deeply divided, I think there are actually areas where we're less divided than it might appear.
Julia, we'll leave it there. Thanks again for joining us today.
Thank you so much. Thanks to the callers for great questions.
That's Julia Azari, Associate Professor of Political Science at Marquette University. She talked to us about why American democracy may have become fractured and, as we just heard, some signs of hope for our system. Maybe that things will get better as we get through it all. Always time for you to share your thoughts on these conversations. You can tweet us at Central Time WPR or email us a note, ideas@WPR.org.